we can then move on, I think everyone had declared, to public questions. And I think we have a first public question on behalf of Mr. Edward Fuller, who was unable to be here, but on this occasion we're willing to accept Councillor Chohan to read the question out on his behalf, and that's to Councillor Keith Ferry.
The resident's question for Keith Ferry is... Oh, hang on, let me wear my glasses first. Can't see it. The West Drive Conservation Area application documentation before you tonight states in paragraph 1.3 that a CA is defined as an area of special architectural or historic interest, the character or appearance of which is desirable or preserved or enhanced, and also that a LA should pay due regards to the view of the residents and the public in the formality of the guidance and the proposals. If the proposal consultation review overwhelms support for the retention of West Drive Gardens and Belfield Avenue, then the West Drive Conservation Area, will you pay due regards to the view of the residents and support the retention?
Thank you very much. The current proposals before us this evening is for public consultation on the proposed changes to the West Drive Conservation Area. No decision on the conservation area boundary is being made as yet. Consultation responses will be thoroughly reviewed and given due weight. It will not be a case of simply counting the number of residents who support the proposal or the number who object to the proposal. A full evaluation of the weight of comments received will be made in relation to the criteria for conservation area designation. The crux of the matter is that it is a statutory requirement that a council can only designate conservation areas that are worthy of preservation or enhancement, and public consultation can help us to ensure that this is done.
Councillor Jones, do you have a supplementary?
Yes, I do, sir. I gather that at the 29th of January LDF panel meeting, the conservation officer and your Labour colleagues made it perfectly clear that they were not in favour of the retention of the inclusion of Belfield Avenue, West Drive Gardens in the conservation area, and that proposal of the consultation was not means about inviting the residents to give their opportunity, but rather it was that they should justify their inclusion, thereby making the basics of the consultation bias. Can you confirm that if the majority of the residents wish to retain the status quo in that they are already included and want to remain so, you will see to that it properly happens?
As I said, it's not really a straw poll of residents. Government policy that was introduced in March 2012 under the National Planning Policy Framework states that when considering the designation of conservation areas, local planning authorities should ensure that an area justifies such status because of its special architectural or historic interest, and that the concept of conservation is not devalued through the designation of areas that lack special interest. To ensure this consistent and high-quality designation of Harrow's conservation areas, paragraph 343 of the Development Management Plan document lists the criteria for conservation area status. Items 1, areas with a high concentration of listed buildings, whether statutory or locally listed. 2, areas of historical, social, economic or architectural merit. 3, areas with a high proportion of buildings built prior to 1920, which remain largely unaltered. 4, areas built post-1920 that are innovative in planning or architectural detail, and where a large proportion remain unaltered. Group 5, a significant group of buildings with a distinct physical identity and cohesiveness. And 6, areas which have a special quality where site layout and landscaping are of exceptionally high quality, or contain historic open space, national landmarks or topographical features. And the guidance in the MPPF says that if 2 or more of those following criteria that I've just mentioned are met, then we can include it in the conservation area, and it is up to the residents to promote the argument that we have at least two or more of those criteria in this area.
Okay, thank you, Councillor Ferry. Question number two from Jerry Devine.
Thank you, good evening.
Would you like to put the microphone on, Jerry? Just do you want to, there you go, we can hear you now. Thank you.
Firstly, Chair, may I correct the spelling of my name? I wouldn't want to embarrass my good friend, the portfolio holder for adults and older people, by implying that I'm a relative. My name is Devine, not Devine. Sorry, Margaret. My question is, given that Harrow cemeteries were not mentioned in the Take Part consultation on environment savings options, residents must assume that they will continue to be locked. If so, why cannot the locking arrangements be extended to include certain key parks, such as Harrow Recreation Ground?
Councillor Palmer.
Thank you, Mr. Devine, for your question. Our consultation showed that 69% of respondents did not express concern around not locking park gates. We will continue to lock the cemetery gates.
Mr. Devine.
Thank you. My supplementary question is, was the cemetery gate decision also subject to equality impact assessment? Was that carried out?
Councillor Palmer?
Yes, sorry.
And in that case, can the cemetery gate locking arrangements not be extended to include key parks? As people will already be employed to lock cemeteries, could the same team not continue to lock certain key parks?
Okay, I think you've made your point, Jerry. I think we'll take note of that.
Yeah.
And thank you for your question on the supplementary on the equalities part. Thank you. If we can move to question number three from Mrs. Jane Galbraith.
Thank you. This question is especially for Varsha Palmer and Sachin Shah, as it concerns the environment and finance. And I'm asking it on behalf of the Harrow Recreation Ground Steering Group. Park users and local residents are worried by the proposal to stop locking park gates at night, and particularly by the threat of cars being able to drive in and out at night. This is a false economy, as it is likely to lead to increased antisocial and criminal behaviour, such as vandalism, noise, prostitution, drug and alcohol use, drug dealing and burglary. The Harrow Bowls Club and Harrow St Mary's Sports Club, as well as residents whose gardens back onto the park, will be at risk of having larger items stolen due to the ease of taking them away. In 2013, the council wisely decided to continue to lock park gates. The petition presented on the 12th of September 2013 with 1,180 signatures should still be respected. If, in spite of this, the council does decide to cease locking park gates, and we hope you won't, and include Harrow Recreation Ground car park gate at night, will you guarantee to undertake a thorough review after 6 months, taking into account costs to residents and the police, as well as to the council?
Thank you, Mrs. Galbraith. And Councillor Shaw will be responding.
Thank you, Mrs. Galbraith. I'm responding because it's a finance related question. I totally understand you are unhappy with this proposal. The reality is, with the budget, there's lots of things we're doing that I wish I didn't have to do. However, we're faced with huge cuts from this government, and they're going to decimate services for some of the most vulnerable people. At a time when we're looking to make people, ask people on job seekers' allowance and others to pay the council tax, the question I ask myself. The question I ask myself, unfortunately, the Tory group are mumbling along. The question I ask myself when we're making all these cuts is, can I justify spending money on locking park gates when services for vulnerable people are being cut? The answer I said to that is no. I totally understand this is a disappointment to you and the user group. I wish I wasn't in a position to have to pass a budget with £25 million of cuts. That's the position we're being forced into, and on that basis, I feel like we cannot. I feel that we cannot justify this service when other services are being cut.
Mrs. Galbraith, do you have a supplementary?
Well, he hasn't actually answered my question about a six-month review, which will take into account not just the cost to the council of any vandalism, but the cost to local residents and the police. And my supplementary I'll go straight on to, which is that for such a review to be genuine, will the council make sure that they have provision so that they can start relocking those park gates where the financial and environmental costs to residents, the police and the council have been shown to be greater than the supposed savings from not locking. If you get rid of all your staff, how are you going to start locking again?
Sure. I know I have spoken to Councillor Palmer, and I know she'll be interested in looking at a review. Exactly how that process will work is not straightforward, because the question is not only about this proposal, but how does that impact on other proposals in the budget. But of course, I know Varsha Palmer's always up for Councillor Palmer's always up for talking to people and looking at issues as they go on.
Okay, thank you, Mrs. Galbraith, for your question. We now move on to question four. Is James Keeler. And your question is to Councillor Sue Anderson.
Yeah, and I'm a service user at Harrow Association of Disabled People. Can I thank... Is it you I'm asking?
Yeah.
Can I thank Councillor Anderson for her article in the latest edition of HADS Access magazine? However, can she set out the Cabinet's vision for the voluntary sector in Harrow, and in particular the vision for all disabled people services and organisations?
Thank you. Obviously, our vision as an administration is to work in partnership with voluntary sector.
Yeah.
And we are committed to co-production in our joint working, and obviously that's something that hopefully is clear from our current consultation and other work that we've done. In relation to disabled people, we value those things like choice, control, we value staying safe, and also quality of life. Although currently there are difficulties facing councils all over the country because of the difficult financial situation.
Yeah.
But in 2014, last year, we signed up to the Third Sector Strategy, which was developed by the voluntary sector and for the voluntary sector in partnership with the council. And it outlines kind of two main themes, key priorities the voluntary sector has set for itself. And one of those is about public engagement, which obviously this administration is very keen on and wants to really get residents' views about things. And we've also had, because under the Localism Act, there's a lot about community rights, so we have made sure that information about community rights has been available, it's publicised, it's shown the details on our website, and we've also obviously done a lot of work on like our pre-budget consultation and obviously our current consultation with the voluntary sector, which, as you know, is going on until tomorrow. And the other theme was strengthening support, which we worked with the voluntary sector to develop a fund, fund and offer infrastructure support through Harrow Community Action, which is obviously with a consortium. And we've worked with a lot of joint projects, such as with Excite and the X16 employment projects, employment streams, and also through our commissioning processes, we've identified services for disabled people as one of the outcomes when we offer discretionary grants. So we've also had voluntary sector partners involved in developing our strategic approach for supporting disabled people. For example, the dementia strategy has been co-produced with voluntary sector organisations and other agencies, and so has the work on the learning disability and autism strategy. That is currently co-produced with like a project board that meets and to push that forward. And obviously, we will also be working closely with the voluntary sector to make sure we meet the requirements of the CARE Act.
Yeah. Shall I just go right into the second?
Yeah, you can ask away.
Follow-up questions. Thank you for setting out your vision for the voluntary sector in Harrow. Would you be willing to support a amending this budget to create a transitional fund to help voluntary sector organisations become sustainable over the next 4 years?
That's a good question, but I'll be honest, that'd be entirely out of my hands, because Councillor Shah is the man who has the purse. Holds the purse strings. Yeah. But obviously we will be working, we wish to work closely with the voluntary sector, yeah, and voluntary, particularly those voluntary organisations that have in the past had funding from the council to try and work ways of going, work, you know, proper ways of going forward on this.
Mr Keelock, thank you for your two questions.
No problem.
If we can move on to question number 5, which is from Nigel Long.
Thank you, Leader. And can I first of all say that I think James is probably one of the best asker of questions tonight. It was really good of him to come here before me. My question is to Councillor Shah. Can Councillor Shah please set out the Cabinet strategy for the long-term funding of the voluntary sector in Harrow, and in particular for all disabled people, services and organisations? And does he share my view that it's been really frustrating, can I stress that, really frustrating for the voluntary sector to not know the proposed funding for each individual organisation?
Thank you for your question. You've heard what Councillor Andon set out in terms of the strategy, and that strategy is an important part of funding, so they are linked. So I'm not going to repeat what Sue has said, but I'm really glad you asked specifically about long-term funding, because you make a really important point, and we need to be planning long-term. At a recent scrutiny review of the budget process, I set out my vision for the budget. The first part of that was long-term planning. We will, with the next budget round, have a 3-year plan. This will allow you to know your position for 3 years and be able to plan for the future. We're also moving to a more outcomes-based approach, so you'll better be able to see what we're trying to achieve and remove some of the silo working that the voluntary sector have complained about in the past. Hope all of that will help you, and of course the work that Councillor Anderson and the Leader are doing to work closer with the voluntary sector will help as well. On your frustration about not knowing the position, I totally get it, I totally understand it. One thing that you have to understand is we didn't even know how much we're getting from the government until a couple of weeks ago. It was this month the government announced it. So we're in completely the same boat as you. Until we know what we're getting from the government, it's hard for us to know how much we can give out. So I get your frustrations, I have those frustrations too. But what we have decided to do is, and we've put some, we've found a budget for it, is to make sure that and no voluntary sector who is losing funding will have less than 3 months' notice, to allow at least to mitigate some of that uncertainty, because we can't remove it altogether. But I do share your frustrations.
Mr. Long, do you have a supplementary?
I do indeed, Leader.
No problem.
Thank you very much for that, Councillor Shah. Can I perhaps push you a step further and say, would you support putting, say, £800,000 into a transitional fund to help the voluntary sector continue to be sustainable over the period covered by the medium-term financial strategy, so it can deliver on corporate priority, making a difference to the vulnerable people? And perhaps if £200,000 a year over the 4-year medium-term financial strategy is not possible, what figure could you put into a transitional fund pot?
I wish I could answer that just like that. The reality is we're gonna go through. Well, we're still consulting. We still haven't made any final decision on the voluntary sector. That consultation is still going. But as I said, we're going to have a 3-year process from next year. I think that's a better way of doing it. And I think through that, you and the other parts of the voluntary sector will be able to get what you're trying to get out of this transition fund is a bit of certainty. And I think we'll be able to give you that through the changes we're going to do in the budget process. So I hope that is a better way, a more sustainable way of doing it. And I'm sure if it doesn't work in a year's time, you'll be back and I'll answer for that then.
Thank you very much.
Question 6 from Jacqueline Hooper.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Sorry, I'm a bit nervous. You are disproportionately cutting services to vulnerable people in the voluntary sector, yet you are awarding yourselves a 2.2% increase in your member allowances. Can you please explain how you can possibly think this is fair. It's Bill David Curry.
That's to me.
Yeah.
And can I say again, welcome back. We see you month after month, and pleased to have you asking questions. And as I said, thank you. The 2.2% increase in council allowances is exactly the same increase which all Harrow staff are receiving this year following a national local government pay settlement. Despite being amongst the lowest paid councillors in London, I feel it is fair to align any allowance increase with that of what our hard working staff receive. In the past, when staff receive either an increase or an agreed decrease, councillors have always followed suit. This is a fair system of determining allowances.
Okay. As leader, you have said that you cannot continue to fund voluntary sector services for the most vulnerable residents in the community. Yet, shamefully, you have been able to afford to pay yourself and your fellow for cabinet members a 2.2% pay rise. You are proposing to cut a service which is enabling myself and others to work towards gaining sustainable employment. Therefore, you are taking away opportunities to have a salary. Will you and all the cabinet members commit to not voting yourselves an increase in member allowances, but commit to use the money towards services for the poorest and most vulnerable residents of Harrow who are most in need?
I think just to respond, and I think the voluntary sector, as we've already heard from other service users within the voluntary sector tonight, have got concerns over the funding which they're receiving and long-term futures, and you have given your own personal account and how worried you are, and we too are worried as an authority about our funding situation, and we have outlined our position on that, and it's something which has already been alluded to from Sachin Shah. But I think in defence of the decision which we've made, we've taken a decision to align any increases in line with what the staff get. As you may be aware, it's within the authority of councillors to increase allowances whenever they wish. We've taken that decision as administration not to do that. So in order to align it with staff is a fair way to administer that. It hasn't been reviewed for 5 years. And I think what should be remembered is we've had an independent report circulated to all councils just recently, which states that each councillor in London, given workload, if you're an elected councillor, that is, should receive around £10,500 per year. We're down at £8,000 and have rejected that independent review to what we should get paid. And so I think we have demonstrated with our voting with our feet that we don't accept what these independent people say, but are stuck to our own model, which I think is fair, and we work hard alongside staff, and so I hope that you can understand that decision and that justification for it.
Thank you very much.
No problem. We have time for one last question, and I think it's from Raksha Pandya, and this will be to Councillor Sachin Shah to respond.
Hello, good evening. Okay, are you satisfied with your Take Part consultations? If so, why have you proposed to increase your budget for litigation for 2.6 million this year?
Thank you. I'll be answering the question. We've not increased our budget to 2.6 million. The number you referred to is the worst case scenario and not the budget for it. In our judgment, there's around a 2 in 3 chance that the worst case scenario won't happen. So the risk is unlikely to materialise. However, the risk remains. It has been a feature of our budget for a number of years. We do have a separate pot of money to deal with the cost of litigation. In total, we're putting in through this budget £375,000, which is the same as we've done in previous years.
Last supplementary?
Of course.
Okay. Right. Your final revenue budget for 2015-16 and the medium-term financial strategy 2015-16 to 2018-19, Appendix 8, page 70 in your supplementary, one of the reasons for the increase, or the worst-case scenario as you put it, from 2 million to 2.6 million is in your litigation against the council is, quote, there is a potential risk around the cost of health and a possible risk of judicial review across a wide range of services, particularly adults and children's social care, unquote. We would agree with the administration that the Take Part consultation for the voluntary sector services is so inaccessible for the vulnerable service users who will be severely impacted, so lacking in proper explanation for service users to make a well-informed response, and so lacking in any questions about the impact on them, that I would not be surprised if service users wanted to pursue a judicial review. How could you have designed a better consultation process so that you could have made better use of that extra £600,000 set aside for litigation and used it to fund the very services that you are cutting for the most vulnerable residents in Harrow?
Just to clarify, we're not setting aside an extra £600,000. We're putting in into our reserve for litigation £375,000, which is the same as was done last year by the last administration. So it is exactly the same amount as is put in. I think that's the right way of doing it. You put in a small amount each year to reserve. It is a risk. I mean, when you're making decisions to cut £25 million out of the budget and 83 over this year and over the next 3 years, there is always a risk to the council on, you know, even if we had a consultation that you thought was fantastic and all sorts of, there's always going to be a risk of litigation, and the right thing and the prudent thing for administration to do is put some money aside just to deal with that. It's not that we think that we will have litigation, it's just a risk, and it's right that we put some money aside to do that. But it is the same amount of money put last year as it is this year, and that's so it isn't about taking money out of the voluntary sector to pay for this. They're two separate budget lines.
Okay, thank you. If we can move on to